Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO news production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. I'm Nancy Solomon. New Jersey will now allow undocumented immigrants the right to drive.
Our roads will be safer. The ranks of uninsured drivers will be lower, and that's good for all of us.
Is one of the most valid IDs. You can enter government buildings. You can get on airplanes with it. You can vote. And now we're kind of saying, it's not really that important. Let's hand these out.
And we'll be talking about new voting rights and a New Jersey congressman's defection from the Democratic Party. Listeners, what do you think about New Jersey easing up on the identification needed to get a license? Have you had trouble coming up with those 6 points of ID? Call us with your questions for Governor Murphy at 844-677-9283. WBGO and WHYY's Statehouse reporter Joe Hernandez will also be taking your questions via social media, so tweet them at us with the hashtag AskGovMurphy. And now I'm joined in the studios of WBGO in Newark by New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy. Good evening, Governor.
Good evening, Nancy. Nice to be here.
I know you're struggling with your headphones, but we'll get that sorted out.
No problem.
So you signed a bill today that would create two tracks of driver's licenses, and one would be open to residents regardless of their immigration status. It's estimated this will affect some 450,000 immigrants in New Jersey, and that there are another 300,000 citizens who are documented but are low income and can't meet the stringent 6-point ID system. This was opposed by Republicans who believe that it's not the right thing to do to give immigrants who came here illegally driver's licenses. But why do you support this?
I'm shocked by that. First of all, it's good to be back. I support it very simply, Nancy, for a couple of reasons. Number one, we're not the first state to do this. I think we're 13th or 14th plus the District of Columbia. And one of the advantages when you're not the first, you get a good look at what the actual results are in the states that have done it before you. And the common themes are the following. Safer roads and lower insurance premiums. So put aside, you know, the other side, the folks who are against something like this are trying to create an us versus them and, frankly, a lot of fear-mongering. So it's obviously good. And I've met scores, if not hundreds of folks and heard their stories, immigrant brothers and sisters, and what they have to do to get to work and home or school and home. It's crazy. So this is clearly going to help them. There's no question about that. But it's going to help us. It's a smart thing to do. And my job, number one, is the safety and security of the 9 million folks who reside in the great Garden State. And this is a big step in that direction. And it's a big step underpinning our fairness agenda. It's the right thing to do.
You know, I was reading New Jersey Policy Perspective, which is the big public policy think tank in New Jersey. They put out a report today about this law, and I was surprised to read about the hundreds of thousands of people who can't get a driver's license just because they don't have the right documentation, even though they're citizens.
Yeah.
But they don't have the right documentation. So this is going to also
help them. Big deal for them. And frankly, I was surprised by the scale of that as well. It's a game changer. I have to say this. I've signed a lot of bills. I think we're now bearing down on 500. I've had a lot of executive orders, a lot of press conferences. I don't think I've been in a more emotional room. I actually been in two rooms this week, and they were vying for two of the most emotional rooms. One was today for this bill, and the other was yesterday for two bills. One of those bills was expungement, one of the most far-reaching expungement bills of any state in America, and the other was restoring the voting rights to folks who are on probation or parole. Two packed rooms. One in Elizabeth today, yesterday here in Newark, and the emotions, the impact that these bills will have on people's lives. This is not just words. This is tangible, game-changing stuff.
Let me ask one more question about the IDs.
Please.
And then I had on my list to talk about the parole and the expungement. So there were huge lines earlier this week in New York when New York made undocumented immigrants able to get driver's licenses. So what's the plan in New Jersey for dealing with, you know, this increased demand at the DMV? I mean, it's kind of legion. We know how bad it is to go to DMV.
Yeah. So
it's gotten better, I will admit that, but yeah. It's still pretty bad.
Sue Fulton is the administrator, and she's doing she's a West Point grad and is bringing her military and other private sector and nonprofit leadership to that organization and doing a great job. And the men and women who work there are doing a great job. So it's part of the reason why this is going to be phased in over the next 13 months. We can't sign the law today and have this a reality tomorrow. So 6 months from now, there's going to be a big public relations program to the very people you're talking about in four languages, by the way, English. And then at that point in time, the three most commonly used foreign languages, if that were today, it would be Spanish, Chinese, and Gujarat. My guess is that won't change. And then it will be a year from January, so January of 2021, when this actually takes effect. And part of the reason is we want to make sure we have all the safeguards in place and that we're anticipating the extra demand. And by the way, the real ID process is being rolled out next year or as we speak into next year. So we want to make sure that we get this right. And I think taking a little bit more time to get it right is the smart, prudent way to go at this.
And there has been some delays with Real ID, right? That process hasn't exactly been smooth either.
It hasn't, but I will say this. The delays, I think, have been in order to make sure that we ultimately achieve the deadline, which is October of 2020. So the delays, actually, I think, have been the right kind of delays, as opposed to a three-hour line to get into the actual building. These are delays to make sure that we've got the right capacity to handle folks once they get there.
So you mentioned the other bills. And, you know, it was a big week because here we are in the lame duck session. A lot of legislation that's been sitting there is yep. getting passed. So let's go back a step before we get to expungement and talk about marijuana, because I sort of see them in kind of order.
Yep.
So the legislature has now set it up so that this will come before the voters in November instead of passing a bill legalizing
yep.
marijuana. You weren't happy about that, but now you're just going to gear up for
November. It's better than nothing, right?
November.
I mean,
yeah.
Eventually we're going to get there. And the reason, Nancy, I'm not happy about it, again, I got to supporting this. I've said this with you in this room before. I got there based on the social injustices associated with the status quo. You know, we have the widest white, non-white gap of persons incarcerated in America, and the overwhelming reason is low-end marijuana offenses. And 600 people, plus or minus, this week will be arrested, overwhelmingly persons of color. And so that's next November, that's about 30,000 people who will go through the system in one form or another. The expungement bill I signed, the good news there is it will limit the damage to those persons' livelihoods and prospects. Would I have liked to have seen it, adult use marijuana done legislatively? Absolutely. This is better than nothing. It's the right thing to do. And again, anybody who thinks the status quo is okay isn't looking at the facts.
And do you think it's fair that or unfair that voters blame you for not getting this done? I mean, I know you wanted this and there weren't enough votes in the legislature to make it happen.
Yep.
What do you say to the voters who really, they don't pay attention to that stuff? They feel like you promised them legal weed and they're not getting it.
I'm not in the blame game. So I don't have any interest in that. My job, I was sent here to get a bunch of stuff done. I think I've also said this here, our 500th day, one of the newspapers said I had 52 campaign promises and we had achieved 47 of them. We're now cranking that up to 50, I think, or close to 50 with today, with driver's licenses. Adult use marijuana is one of the ones that we are passionate about, again, for the social justice reasons. We haven't gotten it done. I'm less interested in who shot John and who's to blame. It will get done. It'll get done. I'm confident it polls overwhelmingly positively. So when folks show up next November, my guess is they'll be showing up for many reasons in November, by the way,
yeah.
Not just for this. It will pass. I'm confident that I will do everything I can to help get it over the goal line, just as I did to try to get it done legislatively. We work collaboratively, I have to say. It just wasn't meant to be. I'm disappointed, deeply disappointed by that, but we're going to get it done eventually.
Okay, lots more questions about the legislation and the bills you signed this week, but we do have a call about some of that legislation. It's Mike from Wyckoff. Mike, you're on the air with the governor.
Very good. Hi, Governor. Thank you for your time and for taking the question.
My pleasure, Mike.
Great. I'm just curious if S-2173 enters onto your desk, if it gets to your desk, how you would justify signing that with the idea that it kind of goes against the religious freedoms that are in our Constitution, and then how would you deal with the fallout, the discrimination lawsuits that may come from that, you know, on a district by district basis, and how that would bog down our system and cost a whole lot of money for discriminating against kids that don't have vaccines or that are you know, have not exercised that religious freedom.
Got it. So, Mike, this is the vaccination bill. And again, forgive me. Sometimes I don't know the code, the bill numbers as well as I should. Listen, I don't comment, Mike, on stuff that we haven't made a decision on. This isn't even yet on our desk. It passed through the General Assembly, and the Senate, I think, deferred it is the right way to put it, based on what I sense. And so I'm not going to comment further on the specifics, but I would say as a general matter, and there's an enormous amount of passion around this, and I get that, as a general matter, we make decisions based on science and fact, and that's no different than how we'll make a decision on this, and that's what guides us. And, you know, I mentioned that my job number one is the safety and security of all 9 million folks who call this great state their home. And I would higher on that list are our kids, our children, and vulnerable populations. And so that's going to be something. Their health and well-being is a very high priority for me. Again, we base our decisions on science and fact, and we'll leave it at that.
Well, let me ask a follow-up. So I understand basing
apparently
things,
we're not leaving it at that.
You know, I understand basing things on science and fact. That, of course, is reasonable. But what do you say to the parents who say that this is a violation of their faith? I mean, you are a man of faith. So, you know, why not have an exemption for the folks who really believe that this violates their faith?
So, again, don't be mad at me, but I'm going to give you the same answer, which is safety and security of our peoples, particularly our kids, is a paramount responsibility. We call these shots based on science. In fact, I don't comment on bills that aren't even at us yet. So we'll leave it there. I appreciate it. Listen, I understand the passion around this. Lots of people on both sides of this have come to me. I get it. I'm a dad myself. I appreciate it. And again, we'll leave it there.
Okay. This is Ask Governor Murphy. I'm Nancy Solomon. We're taking your calls for the governor at 844-677-9283. That's 844-677-9283. Or tweet them using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. And we have one of those social media questions now. Joe Hernandez, what do you got for us?
Gene Sower from Montclair has a question about the independent contractor bill. Gene says, as an entrepreneur who's built a website design business spanning 13 years, the freelancers who work for me work their own hours from their own homes and have other clients like me. None of them would want to be full-time employees, and this bill would effectively put me out of business. How is this fair to me and to them?
So, Gene, first of all, Joe, nice to hear your voice. Gene, we've gotten a lot of, again, I'm going to give you a little bit of a similar answer because this bill is also not on our desk. And this one's also gotten a lot of passion around it. And understandably, you've got a lot of independent contractors who do a particular job, and the parameters around their job meet the litmus test of independent contractors, and I accept that and understand that. On the other side, we have been champions from moment one, in fact, pre-moment one since the campaigns, as it relates to misclassification. And that is a rampant practice, sadly, not just in our state but in our country, where folks are, in fact, employees, and they are characterized in a different bucket. You see this in the construction business trades all the time, where you have unscrupulous contractors who deliberately do this. And basically, it's a way to pay people less and give them less benefits, or both. And that's unacceptable to us. And we are vigilant about that. And I think the spirit of misclassification will continue to guide us. But we want to get it right. We want to make sure that we're not that we've got something that doesn't have unintended consequences for folks who are truly independent contractors. And so, again, that one is not yet on our desk. We'll call that one like we always do, based on the facts and based on a careful study of it, and to make sure we get it right without those unintended consequences.
All right, so let's go back to, you mentioned expungement. So you signed a bill yesterday that expands who can apply for criminal expungements and sets up an automatic clean slate of expungement process for nonviolent offenders who have not committed a new crime in 10 years. This was originally paired with marijuana legalization. Now it's not. So it does seem a little strange, like, okay, we're going to still arrest people for marijuana, but then down the road they can apply for expungement?
Yeah, it's not necessarily the order that you, in a perfect world, would have wanted. It's actually, there's a particular piece of this, and I don't have it in front of me, but there's a particular piece of the expungement law that I signed, actually, that's going to seal any marijuana offenses from the moment of its effectiveness going forward. And so it's, I view it, it isn't intended, in that particular aspect of it, it isn't intended to be a bridge to a better reality, but it may well act that way. Again, that's the prospective reality of someone with a marijuana offense. That will be sealed from the effective date forward. Yeah, this was part of a bigger package. It didn't come with the, I mean, obviously, for we know we didn't get the entire package before us, but this is a big step, I have to say. This is a big step. Another room yesterday, people crying their eyes out at what it will do for them. And as I mentioned earlier, alongside of it, I signed this restoration of voting rights for folks on parole or probation. And these are game changers. These are two more steps to try to allow folks to be whole again, to stand on their feet fully again.
All right, let's go to a call. We've got Mishta on the phone from Egg Harbor. I believe you have a question about the driver's licenses.
Hi. Hi, Governor Murphy.
Hi, ma'am.
I don't have a question, but I just do have a comment. I'm an immigration attorney down here in South Jersey, and, you know, I work with the undocumented population every day. So I really just wanted to call in and say thank you for giving an identity to this community. And, you know, also at the same time, making sure that our roads are safer. So I really applaud you doing this for the community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mishta. That means a lot. And I agree with everything you said, and thank you for saying it.
So you mentioned the voting rights for folks who are on parole or probation.
Yep.
That was part of the package that you signed yesterday, and you mentioned how emotional it was in the room. So this is the law that restores voting rights to people who are on probation or parole. It's really quite extraordinary because, first of all, it affects 80,000 people in the state.
Yep.
But secondly, I was really surprised to read that it's been the law in New Jersey since 1844.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, some of the advocacy groups have used 18 for many years. 1844 is sort of the hook or the brand for this, for that reason.
So now, this is not entirely a Democrat versus Republican issue, because when Chris Christie was governor, he reformed the cash bail system.
Yep.
So we're in the process of really making some pretty big criminal justice changes in the state. But there are Republicans in the legislature did oppose this bill. And, you know, they think people need to finish their full sentences before being able to vote. So I just wanted to give you a chance to respond. You know, why was this important to you?
Yeah, listen, I think it is. I think, Nancy, you're right. I think it's 82,000 people. So it's a big deal. And gosh, I tell you something, you know, we call this the second chance agenda. I want to be the second chance state. Who doesn't make mistakes? Who doesn't look back and regret something they did in many cases when they were young? So with all due respect, the fact of the matter is when you've gone through the system, you've paid your price, you've repented, you're on probation or parole, and you're in the community again, you're trying to get back on your feet, and yet you don't have a voice in the direction of that community, that's just not right.
We're going to have to stop it there. I'm Nancy Solomon. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy.
You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283 or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon. We're live in Newark with Governor Phil Murphy, and I think we'll go right back to the phones. We have John. I don't know where John's from.
Hi, I'm from Lumberton.
Hey, John.
How are you? Hi. My specific question is also with regards to the Senate 2173. I do understand your position is based on science and fact, which is precisely why I'm calling, because I actually have scientific information that I would like you to consider. And so, you know, when I hear that, you know, that there's no science or facts on the side of opposition to vaccinations, that's just simply not true. I happen to be a disabled veteran suffering from Gulf War illness that was due to the anthrax vaccination that contains oil-based adjuvant called squalene. And adjuvants themselves have been linked to something called autoimmune inflammatory syndrome induced by adjuvants. ASIA is the acronym. And this is actually responsible for a lot of autoimmune diseases. And I myself, like I said, I'm a disabled veteran because of this. And I think this is definitely pertinent, relevant information that is published in scientific peer-reviewed journals that I would implore you to at least be willing to listen to. I'm actually in the process of sending this information to Senator Sweeney's office, and I would love to send them to you as well.
Okay. Joe, listen, very fair. First of all, before I talk about your specific offer, thank you for your service to our country. God bless you for that. Separately, we take input from all sides on every issue, including this one. So we are more than happy to connect with you. In fact, our whole cabinet, as usual, is listening tonight, and I'd love to ask our commissioner. Of the Department of Health, Judy Persicelli, or one of her designees, to reach out to you. We'll try to get to you by tomorrow and get that information from you. So again, thank you for your service, and thank you for offering to give us the information.
And we have questions also coming in on social with using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. Joe Hernandez, what do you have for us?
Here's a question from Kenny in Newark. Kenny says, would you support New Jersey becoming the first state in the U.S. to lower its voting age to 16? Issues like climate change will affect today's 16-year-olds more than today's 60-year-olds.
Kenny, I don't think I've ever been asked that. I'm open to opening up democracy wide. I promise you that. I promise I'll think about it. Again, I've never been asked it. I'll tell you one thing that we want to do, which isn't quite 16, and my daughter Emma actually was in this boat. We want to have a provision where if you're 17 at the time of the primary, but you'll turn 18 before the general, that you should be allowed to vote in the primary. My daughter was actually in that box and she couldn't. We've begun to open up democracy, automatic voter registration, which is great. I'm thrilled we've done that, but we're still behind the eight ball on other steps. The provision I just mentioned, we need desperately in-person 30-day before the election day voting, you know, one location in each county. We need to have that. It's a real deficiency in our sort of democracy. I'm thrilled that I signed the probation parole. That's another great step in the right direction. We need more. Kenny, I'm very happy to consider the 16-year-old. I've got a 16-year-old. If my son Sam is listening, he'd be happy to know that I'm going to give it consideration. But it's a good question. And as I say to young people all the time, the voter turnout for youth, even as it is today, is a fraction of the voter turnout of the seniors. And the fact of the matter is, folks in my vintage are making decisions that are going to impact the youth for decades and decades and decades. And we need to do whatever we can to get the youth vote to get out and turn out and vote.
Okay, let's stick with calls coming in on the phone lines because we have Henry from Pennsylvania, who I think has another question about voting.
From Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Okay.
Henry?
Hello, Henry.
Hi.
My name's Henry. I'm a volunteer with the Pennsylvania League of Women Voters. I was speaking with your Bureau of Elections today, and they confirmed what I thought. Your legislature is thinking about having legislation for online voter registration. So Pennsylvania is one of 37 states that will have online registration next year in 2 weeks. You don't have the legislation. Would you be interested in introducing to the New Jersey legislature a consensus like yay, nay of both houses to initiate legislation so you might have it by the fall?
Listen, on our list of steps, as I just referred to a minute ago, there's a whole series of steps. Online registration is on my list. The way our system works, Henry, and by the way, great for you to call in from Pennsylvania. Would love you to move to New Jersey, by the way. The way our system works, though, is we need sponsors in both chambers to lead that process. But as a conceptual matter, it is something that we've said we would support. Without, you know, obviously getting into the details, we're behind the eight ball on that. We're behind the eight ball on in-person voting 30 days in advance. And think about that one for a minute. If you're a senior, if you're anybody who may have difficulty getting to the polls, which is exacerbated by weather, something simple like weather, or your train is late that night, which I hope won't happen anymore in New Jersey. But if it does, you're beholden to that one specific day. I think that's crazy. We need many more days for folks to choose from to get out and vote. Online registration is something I'd like to see in New Jersey as a general matter.
Well, and staying with this idea about getting more people out to vote, we were talking about that you've just now extended voting rights to people who are on parole and probation, and that's somewhere north of 80,000 people who come onto the rolls this year. So what are you thinking about? Like, what kind of impact does that have on the 2020 election? I mean, obviously, you know, New Jersey is not a swing state. I think we pretty much know that Trump is not going to get supported in New Jersey. But there are going to be a bunch of other things on that ballot that are going to be heavily contested. Congressional races, legislative races, a ballot measure on legalizing marijuana we mentioned. So what's the thinking about expanding voting rights, and what's that going to mean?
So I don't want to disappoint you, but this, and I say this as the titular head of the Democratic Party, I kind of don't care what it means. It's the right thing to do. These folks have paid their price. They've repented. They've done what was asked of them. And they deserve to have the right to vote. And whether they vote yay or nay on something I may care about, I obviously want a new president. Let there be no doubt about that. So I'm with Cory Booker. By the way, I have to say we're running tonight, Nancy, against the Democratic debate and impeachment.
Don't tell people they'll switch.
No, exactly. We may want to pipe in some highlights during our conversation here together. I want to beat Trump. I want to reelect some really good Democratic members of the House of Representatives. I care about adult use marijuana. I want to get that referendum passed. There's no question about all that. And I'll do everything I can to make all the above happen. But I don't really care about whether or not what we did yesterday helps or hurts those causes. It's the right thing to do.
Okay, well, we have lots of calls coming in. And folks, if you'd like to ask the governor anything, the number is 844-677-9283. Or you can tweet your questions using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. So we do have folks on the line. Are we set up, Doug, to go to one of them? We got a call on pensions, police, fire, and pensions.
Okay.
Maybe I should keep moving. Okay, so we have Jimmy from Marlton on the line.
Hello, Governor Murphy.
Hey, Jimmy, how are you?
Hi, I'm a retired law enforcement officer, retired since 2009.
Bless you.
And we had our cost of living adjustment frozen by the previous governor.
Yep.
And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about possibly reestablishing that.
Jimmy, if I could find the money, I would, and I'm not going to give up trying. This is one I've talked about for years and years and years, and it's a classic way that decisions got made in the last administration. First of all, they were jammed down your throat. There was no participation, and we've stopped that completely. No more name calling. No more basically unilateral. Not basically unilateral decisions, and savings were talked about in gross terms. Cost of living adjustment will save us $3 billion. Well, that may be true in the aggregate, but the fact of the matter is, and Jimmy, I don't know your circumstances. Thank you for your service to our state and whatever the community it may have been in law enforcement. The fact of the matter is, that cost of living adjustment was the difference between making it or not making it in a whole lot of people's lives, retirees in this case. The problem is 9 or 10 years down the road, fiscal mismanagement all over the place by the last administration. You know, we're cornered. We're digging out of this mess, and that's the good news. Slowly but surely, we're digging out of it. And if we can find the resources to do at least something in that direction, I promise you, we will do it. But it's hard, I have to admit. And I just wish we had never gone down this unilateral path where you got to jam down your throat to begin with, because you didn't deserve that.
Okay, thank you. And so let's talk about what had to have been the worst event of many months, but certainly it happened 9 days ago. The Jersey City shootings killed a highly respected police officer and 3 people inside a kosher market. That was a week ago Tuesday. Most people believe that the fatal shootings in Jersey City were motivated by hate and anti-Semitism. So what would you say, I mean, what aren't we doing that we could be doing about this rise that we're seeing in both white supremacy and in anti-Semitism? I mean, it's very clear all over the country, but so here in New Jersey, what could we be doing more about this?
So let me just acknowledge much of what you said, Nancy, and I'm glad you brought it up. 4 innocent lives. Detective Joe Seals, who was a star by any measure, father of 5, lots of siblings, husband, incredible guy by all accounts. Mindy Ferenc, a mom of 3, who was sort of the den mother for the Jewish community in that section of Jersey City. Moishe Deutsch, a young rising star visiting from Brooklyn, lots of relatives in Jersey. And then Douglas Miguel Rodriguez, an Ecuadorian immigrant working in the kosher bodega. Just stopping there, listen to the diversity of these blessed folks who were whose lives were taken. So keep them in prayers. Keep law enforcement, beginning with Jersey City Police Department, who contained what otherwise could have been an even larger catastrophe. And you're absolutely right, based on the investigation, and I think we should defer to the U.S. attorney, the FBI, the ATF, our attorney general, to let them do their work. And I know it's ongoing, but it's quite clear, and they said this quite clearly within a day or two, it was hatred directed at law enforcement and the Jewish community. That's unequivocal. The rise of anti-Semitic behavior and actions in our state is shocking. It's no different, unfortunately, than the rise in the country. And with looking toward my prior life as a U.S. ambassador in Europe, we're seeing it all over there as well. So a couple of things. I think we have to we cannot ignore the responsibility that elected leaders such as myself and others have to stand up and responsibly use the bully pulpit. This business of dividing us versus them is at the root of a lot of this. We cannot keep going down that road. One of the great things that came out of the tragedy of last week, and I've seen it with my own eyes, I've been in Jersey City a bunch since then, is how communities have come together across faith, race, ethnicity. Really, the strength of Jersey City, the strength of New Jersey was on full display as we gathered around multi-faith discussion tables, as we worshiped, as we prayed, as we just came together. But responsible use of that bully pulpit. Secondly, social media. We need a rethink, I think, at the federal level in particular, of how our hate crimes can extend again, intelligently into the 21st century, at the verge of finishing our second decade, and encompass the hatred that is spewed, the vile, awful stuff on social media. Look at Rise Up Ocean County. Look at the stuff that's coming out of that. Look at Rockland County and the social media in New York State. This stuff is awful. And it feeds this. So those are not the only. And by the way, thirdly, strong, unwavering, uncompromising law enforcement against any actions that may come up, whether it's painting a swastika, whether it's doing something awful to your house. I'm proud to say that I signed a law earlier this year that put a lot more money into the security of institutions of faith, including temples, religious schools, community centers. Folks, if they're wondering if they're eligible or how they could go about applying for some of that resources, njhomelandsecurity.gov, njhomelandsecurity.gov. So putting money where our mouth is something else that we're doing.
So in terms of do you think that the state or the feds are spending enough money on the investigative side? I mean, it's one thing to have a cop outside of a synagogue on a Saturday morning, but what about the sort of the intelligence work that has been so focused on foreign Islamic terrorism, which doesn't appear to be as much of a threat as domestic terrorism, yet we don't seem to have the necessary intelligence in place doing that kind of work?
I'm not sure that I know enough to know one way or the other in terms of the apportionment of the money and the resources, but I will say this, the investigation that's going on coming out of Jersey City is far-reaching, comprehensive, aggressive, both federal and state and local and county. I had the occasion to speak with the president, actually, the night of the tragedy, to thank him for the support that the feds were providing for us, and I would repeat that again, and I give it my hat is to the U.S. attorney, to our attorney general, FBI, ATF. There's always going to be lessons learned, even from awful tragedies like this. We've been spending spending an enormous amount of time well before what happened in Jersey City on this topic. Again, if you gave me one magic wand or maybe two, it would be continuing to provide the security dollars that we're providing, and we will continue to do that. We will not waver on that front, and making a bold stroke, probably at the federal level. This is really federal stuff more than state, at social media. I'm all for the First Amendment. I'm all for free speech. But spewing hatred is not part of that bargain.
All right, let's quickly turn to guns and gun control. I mean, the arsenal that this couple had was alarming. Anything that you've learned that gives us any lesson about, you know, what we can do to stop the flow of guns coming into the state?
Yeah, so we've got I'm going to put our gun safety laws up against any other states in America. That's the good news. The bad news is 80% of the crimes committed with guns in our state are guns that illegally come in from other states. That's why we form states for gun safety. That's why we name and shame other states that ship them in or other manufacturers. But it's also why, Nancy, there's nothing we can do that comes close to national, federal gun safety legislation. Please, God.
Okay, thank you. You're listening to Ask Governor Murphy. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more of your calls and your questions on social media. This is Ask Governor Murphy.
Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO News production in collaboration with WNYC and WHYY. Got a question for the governor? Call us at 844-677-9283. Or send us your questions on Twitter or Facebook with the hashtag AskGovMurphy.
I'm Nancy Solomon, and we're live in the studios of WBGO with Governor Phil Murphy. So we always get lots of calls about environmental issues, Governor. And a fairly constant one is problems with toxic landfills. Yeah. Residents in Kearney and the Meadowlands are collecting signatures on a petition to you about the state-owned Keegan landfill. They complain of sulfur odor and say it's causing health problems. How do you respond to these folks?
Well, I've got a more concrete response tonight than I normally have. I normally say I'm pro-environment. I'll put our record against anybody. Any other state, and I care deeply about the concerns of these folks. But for the past year, at frankly my personal direction, our office has been working with both the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority and the town of Kearney to come to an agreement on the Keegan landfill. And I am proud today to announce, I think it may have already leaked out there, that the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority and Kearney have reached an agreement for the permanent closure and capping of the Keegan landfill, which is a big accomplishment. Together, both the Sports and Exposition Authority and Kearney will create a plan that they'll then submit to the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection for the permanent closure and capping of the landfill, and that will include with an impermeable liner. I'm not smart enough to know exactly what that's going to look like or what that is, but that's part of the plan. And it's still being finalized. So if a caller is asking me for the details, I'm not going to have much more than I'm saying. But the authority and the town have agreed to work together to complete it, the capping, closure of the landfill in a responsible way, as timely as they can do it. And then in addition to that, which is where I think we all want to get land in any event, is to create sort of future recreational access to the Kearney Marsh and withdrawal, and then any of the outstanding claims and appeals will then be withdrawn. So this is hopefully a win-win-win.
So the Kearney Marsh, I don't know exactly what that is, but I'm guessing it's meadowlands. It's sort of, you could go canoeing through the grasses.
Yes, and that heretofore has been, shall we say, shut off as an alternative, and the objective is to get this thing sealed, as I said, with an impermeable liner to do it right. So it's going to take some time. So I want folks to know the good news is there's an agreement, and that's the most important thing. Let's make sure we lay this out properly with the Department of Environmental Protection, get that done, and then, you know, open up access to something that heretofore has not been available.
Okay.
So it's a good result. One plus one equals three on this one, I think.
Okay. So it was also just a huge week in terms of politics. We have. So there was the drama of the impeachment. And of course, New Jersey became a major story in the drama of the impeachment with Jeff Van Drew, our congressman from South Jersey, a Democrat who not just voted against impeachment, but then let it kind of leak out that he was leaving the party and becoming a Republican. I believe that is now official out of the words of Donald Trump, because Van Drew met with him today. This did not please you.
It didn't. In fact, I think Congressman Van Drew was in the Oval Office today. So this is absolutely official, and I think he quote-unquote something like pledged his allegiance to President Trump forever and always, or some phrase like that. I'm not sure what it sounded like, the end of a I'm not sure what, but I think it's ridiculous. And I said this many times this week, but he chose politics over the Constitution and doing the right thing. He chose cuteness over courage. I think that'll come back to blow up in his face.
Why do you say cuteness? I heard you say that and I didn't understand.
Well, he's trying to be politically cute. He saw a poll apparently he didn't like. He's basing all of this on the impeachment vote. And you've got Mikey Sherrill, Andy Kim, Tom Malinowski, Josh Gottheimer, to their enormous credit, standing up, showing courage, even when there's passion on both sides of this, and saying, you know what, this is the right thing for our country and for our defending our Constitution. And this Jeff, on the other hand, is trying to find a way to sort of skate through the raindrops. And impeachment's a big deal, right? So you gotta show courage there, or you cut and run. And he chose to cut and run. But I would also remind folks, impeachment isn't the only factor that defines a Democrat. Where are you on education and health care and the environment and gun safety, as we've just discussed a few minutes ago? There's scores, if not hundreds, of things that add up to being a Democrat. And I think it's time to be a proud Democrat and be proud of our values and lean in and show that courage. And I think courage that Mikey and Andy and Tom and Josh are showing, I think that courage will be rewarded.
But might it not be just the right decision for him if he's more inclined towards the politics of the Republican Party? I mean, he was known as a very conservative Democrat.
Yeah, but think of, first of all, you should ask him that yourself, Nancy, and I can't speak for him, that's for sure.
Do you think he was he pushed out of the party by the pressure going on in the district, or and by maybe pressure of the leadership, or was he jumping ship because
I think he made this call. This is him. This is all on him. Mm-hmm. The good news is you're already starting to see Democrats declare their interest in running for that seat. My guess is, based on what has been actually declared or rumored to be declared, we're going to have a really good field. And I will tell you this, we're going to win that seat back. This is, in political terms, an R plus one, so it leans a little bit that way. President Trump did win the district, but President Obama carried it by a wider margin than President Trump had carried it. We're going to have, I hope and expect, a good field. I think we should have a really good, clean, open process that gives everybody a fair shot, get to know these candidates, and then whoever the winner is on our side, I'm going to be with 1,000%, and we're going to win that back. You heard it here tonight.
Well, maybe this is something you and Democratic Party boss George Norcross agree on.
You never know here. You never know. But I tell you one thing. I want to make sure that on our side, We encourage a lot of really good candidates who are considering it to come out. Let's give a chance to really get to know them and have a process that we can be proud of. And whoever that winner is on our side, I'm going to be with 1,000% in November.
So we're going to go back to the phones. We have Robert. No, I'm sorry. We have John from Newark on the line. Good evening, John.
Hi.
Hey, John.
Hi, Governor Murphy.
How are you, sir?
Okay. We have the House now. Democrats have the House. So why can't we pass it into law? If you want to run for president, you have to show your taxes for the last 10 years.
Yeah, I good question. We have the House, but we don't have the Senate and the White House, so that's part of the reason. Yeah, I think you should listen. I've shown my taxes for I don't know how many years, but it's many. I think that's frankly good housekeeping. I think folks should be willing to be transparent about that. I know President Trump has not, and he's fought that hard. I think the fact that he's fighting it says a whole lot, regardless of what the facts are. But I'm a big believer in transparency. I think folks who run at all levels of the ballot ought to be willing to share that with voters and with the folks who are considering whether or not to support them.
Okay, this is Ask Governor Murphy. I'm Nancy Solomon. We're taking your calls for the governor at 844-677-9283, or you can tweet them using the hashtag AskGovMurphy. And now we have, we're going to go to Joe on social media to give us another question.
This question is from Diana in Morris County. She says, why is the speed limit on the Garden State Parkway and the New Jersey Turnpike and other major roads still 55 and 65 miles per hour? New Jersey is one of less than a dozen states with this speed limit.
As opposed to a higher limit?
I think so, right?
Yes.
Well, I'm not a petroleum engineer, but we've always been led to believe when the speed limits were put on and then dropped down to 55, is a more efficient speed at which to drive and burn fuel. So I don't know that I've got a whole lot of insight beyond that. We are the densest state in America. Our roads, therefore, are quite densely populated. So there's not only the question of what's right for efficiency in the environment, but there's also the question of what's right for safety. And when you're New Jersey, you have a whole lot of folks, both who live here, who are out there driving around, and a whole lot of other folks who are passing through, including with a lot of commercial and truck traffic. So I don't have a more insight into it than that, but I think for both of those reasons, efficiency and safety, I don't think we should be too upset about where our speed limits are.
So it looks like, Governor, it looks like the most popular thing that you've done so far since you became governor is turning over the state's Twitter account to a couple of millennials who have great senses of humor. For example, when someone tweeted, "Who let New Jersey have a Twitter account?" the reply from @NJGov was, "Your mom." And as of this afternoon, that had gotten 485,000 likes and 84,000 retweets. So I got an email urging me to ask you about this account. You know, in some ways, it's kind of like having the good part of Chris Christie back, you know, because he was funny. And so without the mean edge. But so where did this come from?
It didn't come from Chris Christie. Let's get that off the table. I can tell you that much. Listen, we're getting a lot of attention because of this. And I think that's very cool. I want to give Pearl Gable and Megan Coyne, who are my two colleagues, a huge shout out. They're really talented. They've got great senses of humor. And they've got a really good sense of the attitude that defines New Jersey. Your mom is a great is the one that's probably the most famous of their quips, but that sort of gives you that's only Jersey can say that, right? But there's a bigger reason to it, and I think that's an important point as well, which is, you know, we're trying to appeal to a broader range of folks. We had a big discussion earlier in this hour about getting younger people to get interested in registering and turning out to vote and getting read into some of the big decisions that are getting made. So the hope is not just the front end attitude and fun, which is in and of itself kind of cool, but to draw folks in over time into some of the big discussions that we're having on environmental issues, educational, gun safety, whatever it might be, that we hopefully can use this as a way to bring people to the table, particularly young people, where the skewing of the turnout numbers, if you're in my vintage versus a 20 millennial, is unacceptably, that gap is unacceptably high, and hopefully this can serve to shrink that.
Let's move on. So, because we've got a perfect transition here, we've got a caller who we're going to put on in a sec with a question about the new Rutgers coach.
Okay.
But so I think you took some flack about this from Chris Christie on social media, the hiring of Greg Schiano. So let's go to this call. Robert from Hopewell, you're on the line with the governor.
Hi, Governor. I just wanted to thank you for getting involved. I think it was a great hire. And I just wanted to ask you what went into that process and, getting Greg back home. And, again, just thank you. I think it's already paying dividends.
Thank you, Robert. And I do think it was the right thing to do. And, I want to put an elephant in the room right on the table here, and that is there are some folks out there who said, hey, wait a minute. Rutgers is a, research and teaching university. What are we doing? Going out and getting a football coach of this level of renown, et cetera. The fact of the matter is when you're at the scale of Rutgers University, one of the great public universities in America, both teaching and research with extraordinary professors and staff and students, and you're in the Big Ten as an athletic matter, it's not either or. You already – that ship has sailed. This is and both. You've got to support a great American research and teaching university on the one hand, and you got to be competitive in athletics on the other hand. And Rutgers, by the way, is very competitive in a whole handful of sports. Tammy and I were at a Rutgers women's basketball game a couple of weeks ago. They're really good, and they've been good for a long time with Coach Vivian Stringer. The wrestling team is a national championship team, and I think having a football team that goes out there and is competitive is and as a source of pride for Rutgers, for the student athletes, for the broader Rutgers community, and for the state is a good thing for New Jersey. And I think Greg Schiano is a guy who proved it here before, and he's come back in like gangbusters already. He and I were back and forth. Yesterday was the early intention signing day. Rutgers went from kind of nowhere to a really great group. In terms of my role, I'll leave that to the historians, but we felt strongly that this is something that needed to get done and should get done on the right terms for everybody. And I think that's where we landed, and I'm thrilled to have him back at the helm. And again, I want to remind everybody it's not either or. At this scale, at this level of commitment, it's and both, and this is a great step in that direction.
Okay, we want to try to squeeze in one last call. We have Cheryl in Cherry Hill.
Hi, Governor. Thank you so much for taking my call tonight.
My pleasure.
I'm a woman in the workplace in a really competitive field, and I'm really happy for things like that you've done with pay equity, so I'm grateful for that. But there's one thing that's been bugging me that I read about, and I wanted to run it by you. I read about Julie Rudzinski, who was required to sign a non-disclosure agreement by your campaign. My question is, are you going to release Julie from this gag order?
Cheryl, it's with all due respect, this is not a gag order. Anybody who's ever had any issue related to our campaign or, frankly, our time in government has had a clear path, no restrictions, period, full stop, on if they've got an issue with a workplace condition for coming forward and expressing that to the appropriate channels. There's never been an issue with anybody, and there won't ever be, period. Campaigns, this just in, campaigns, we'll compare this back to the last question about football teams. You have a playbook that is proprietary to your campaign, just like you do in a football team, and you don't leave your playbook sitting on the bus. The notion is there are information in a campaign that's proprietary. that's specific, that's part of your strategy, just like there is in a football game plan. And that's not just our campaign. That's campaigns all over the state and all over the country. That's the way it's always been, and that's the way it always will be. It has nothing whatsoever. It never has been and never will. If anybody's got any issue with a workplace condition, there's no restrictions at all for them to come forward and express that.
Okay, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. You've been listening to Ask Governor Murphy, a WBGO news production in collaboration with WHYY and WNYC. This show is produced by Doug Doyle with help from Eugene Son, Joe Hernandez, Alexandra Hill, Ang Santos, Nick Pugliese, Joseph Capriglione, and our executive producer is Amy Niles. Our engineer is David Tallickson. I'm Nancy Solomon. Thanks for listening. This is Ask Governor Murphy.